Good evening and welcome to the Raucous Caucus, live now. Live at Ben's Next Door. Next door to Ben's Chili Bowl, 12th and Jew. Mark, Terry, and Garland. Three minds linked and locked in analysis, wit, and sagacity. Every Tuesday night, live. Live right here, 7 p.m. WPFW 89.3 FM. Welcome again. Live with Terry, Mark, and Garland. And the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and welcome to another edition of the Raucous Caucus. My name's Garland Nixon and I am here with
Terry D. Kester, the last damn doctor of democracy in this dump.
And
Mark Levine, who doesn't have to keep some name afterwards like Terry.
That's because you haven't gonna need a middle initial that works for you. You know, what can I tell you? Get a middle initial.
We are glad to be here.
All right, guys.
And glad to be the Raucous
Caucus. That's right. And we are here live at Ben's Next Door, which is on U Street, right next to Ben's Chili Bowl. I'm sure you know where that is. And believe it or not,
1211 U Street, Northwest.
That's right, Northwest. And believe it or not, there is an empty seat next to me. And very shortly, that will
be filled.
Did you
kill a man?
Well, no. Not the man that's going to fill this seat. Tonight, Congressman John Conyers Jr. will be showing up right here. There's an empty seat. He had to vote at 6:45, so he's going to be hustling over here fairly soon.
Boy, have we got some questions.
John Conyers,
right here.
The ranking member of the House Judiciary Committee, the most powerful Democrat on the House Judiciary Committee.
The man who pushed through the bill that made Dr. Martin Luther King's birthday a holiday. That's who I'm talking about. So if you're out there... We're just starting. Let's hear it for that.
That we do have a crowd here, and you're welcome to join us.
That's right. So if you're out there meandering around somewhere, the hinterlands of Washington, D.C., find your way over here to U Street. Come in here. Get a seat. We got good food. We got good drinks. And we're going to have Congressman John Conyers come here. You can see him in person. You can meet him and let him know how much y'all all love him, because we're sure going to do that.
What's he voting on?
He had a vote?
I don't know what he's
voting on. He had a Republican schedule.
I fear the way things are going in the House these days, I really don't want to know what he was voting on.
Probably a vote to end the government as we know it.
I think
already happened.
No, actually.
Where have you been?
All right.
I think they're making a decision whether to use poor people as fuel.
Oh,
you know, it's going to be like a renewable fuel. Yeah, you just use poor people and just continue to burn.
It's a modest proposal.
That's the only thing left.
That's about it.
It's a Tea Party proposal.
Right.
Yeah. So, at any rate, we're going to be talking. He's got a jobs bill, an outstanding jobs bill. It's really interesting. You can go on his website and check it out. But basically, what it would do is it would provide jobs, kind of similar to what FDR did with the CCC and WPA. It would provide a job for anyone who wants to work. It is fully funded.
That's un-American.
Deficit neutral.
That's un-American. Damn.
Fully funded. I'll bet it taxes billionaires.
Yes. Actually, what happens is
there are
some very minute taxes to Wall Street transactions. Very, very, like 0.25% to Wall Street transactions, which generates enough money to provide anyone in this country who wants a job, a job. Now,
that's
of course.
Paid. You don't think the Republicans are going to eat that alive?
No.
I'm with John Conyers.
Yeah, you don't necessarily think that that's going to go through. However, here's the thing.
When have you ever been practical, Terry, in your life?
Here's the thing about it.
I was born practical, young man.
You were practical.
That's the last time he was practical, when he was born.
Yeah, that's probably true.
Practical decision. Yeah.
But at any rate, we're going to talk about the jobs bill. We're going to talk about how important that is. And there are things in it that, let's face it, the Democrats could stand to move to the left a little bit here. There are going to be some things in that they may be able to take out and they may be able to use in the 2012.
And the big question, Garland, is Obama going to be behind this or is he going to walk south again?
Mark?
That kind of brings us to what's going to happen tomorrow afternoon.
Bail me out, Marty.
George Washington University, our president is going to give a speech. Apparently,
late to lunch again.
Apparently, he's going to endorse some of the proposals of the deficit commission, which will include, believe it or not, and I hate to say it, and I don't want to make it true if I say it, but maybe even cuts to entitlements, which means
Medicare, Medicaid, healthcare, education,
which
all the good
stuff. Which makes me wonder what
society,
the heck we elected a progressive Democrat for. Now, I hope it's not true. President Obama, I know you listen to WPFW. I know you listen to 89.3 FM.
And if he doesn't, he damn well should.
If you're listening to Raucous Caucus right now,
I've had it.
Let me tell you, I think it's politically unwise as well as damn cruel to start cutting these entitlements. Well, I hope he backs off.
Let me tell you this. I don't like the way the political conversation is going and how we get here. Because let's
you
face
mean
it,
between Mark and I?
Yeah. Well, no, that either. I never liked that conversation. I was saying an intellectual conversation, one that would involve you guys.
Just checking.
Okay.
Just checking.
But so what I'm saying is I don't like the conversation that's going on in America today, because not amongst the politicians, because what we have now is a conversation of the rich. And it has to be of the rich, because I know this. The question is this. These are the questions. How much more can we give to the wealthy?
Uh-huh.
And how much more can we take from the working class and the poor and the working poor? That is the only questions. Premise A, we must balance the budget right now in violation of all Keynesian economical principles.
Of Republican principles when they were in charge and they were spending out the wazoo.
Right. Details. So A, we must balance the budget. And B, or bring down the deficit. And B, we must do it by giving more money to the rich, as the Republican calls them, the job creators. I don't know where that came from.
Garland,
and
they,
taking
they
more.
Jobs for children
in fact,
in China.
I think we should take it from Terry.
Garland, you're looking at this all wrong.
Oh, really? You know? That's probably what it is.
I mean, you ask what more can be given. Now, you know, we're at the 150th anniversary of the Civil War.
Right.
And there are a lot of people that think, you know, the wrong side won.
Correct.
And, you know, the one thing that the government can do is reinstall slavery.
Yeah, there we go.
Reinstate slavery. Then the rich. Yeah, well, they almost have that.
We already have that because
we do.
Corporations.
But I mean, officially.
They use 9-year-olds in China to make all our products.
Yeah, but you can get
whips. And they're, in effect, slaves.
You can get whips and you can trade people. Well, you can break up families.
Scott
you can sell children.
Scott Walker is in the process of doing that reinstating slavery. That's the Wisconsin thing.
Yeah.
First, you take all of their bargaining rights, and the next thing you know, they're baling hay and picking cotton.
And more importantly, how come Mark gets to eat and we don't, Garland?
I mean, that's something I got a problem with.
It spends next door. It's a great
people
restaurant.
On the air don't know
don't talk with your mouth,
Terry. Come on. You had to break the secret. I figured you were talking. I had at least an hour to eat.
Least. There's no class.
Once again, let me remind everyone, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Terry D. Kester.
And
Mark Levine.
Mark.
The man with the mouthful.
Yes. And we're talking politics today, and in a few minutes, very few short minutes, sometimes in the next 15 or 20 minutes, Congressman John Conyers is going to be here. He's going to occupy the seat next to me, and we're going to have a great conversation about his jobs bill and other things. And if you're out there riding around, make it down to Ben's next door, come in here, and help us give a big round of applause for Congressman Conyers.
I don't think everybody knows who John Conyers is.
Maybe you ought to fill us in, Mark.
Well, John Conyers has been...
It's un-American. Truly un-American.
Well, a lot of people, I'm sorry, don't know who John Conyers is.
I'm sorry.
He's been around
30, 40, 50 years.
1965.
Years.
Yeah, 1965 is when he was first elected.
Him in during
45 years.
Yeah.
65?
65,
really?
He was elected.
Wow, I knew he'd been around a long time. He's from Michigan. He is the leading Democrat.
From Detroit.
The ranking member of the committee.
Member of the committee. Of course, he was the chairman of the committee until a certain awful event happened in the last election. Republicans took over. But he's a very strong progressive. One of the things I like about John Conyers is I think he's got a pretty good mix of both progressivism and practicality. I don't think he's one of those progressives that only does things just to be idealistic, but he actually gets things through.
Oh, you left something out. Let me throw this in. He's also the leader of the Out of Afghanistan Caucus.
He is.
Yes.
He is.
He's also the one congressional leader that sat here the last time.
Oh, yes.
We had the privilege of having him on the show, the one congressional leader that finally understands that unless the people of America take it to the streets, ain't nothing gonna change here in town.
Let me tell my listeners, our regular listeners know that it's nothing for uncommon for Terry here to say
we need to take it to the streets.
Usually says it every 5 minutes.
Yeah, generally.
When
he's not saying it, he's running out to the streets and running up down
Damn
the street
right.
marching or something. But at any rate, the last time Congressman Conyers was here and we looked over and asked him, what do you think we need to do to make a change? And he said,
Take it to the streets.
If you could have saw the look on the smile on Terry's face.
I tell you, made my day.
Is it possible, Terry, you always want to take it to the streets because you're always...
Don't talk with your mouth full, Mark.
You're always kicked out of fine establishments, and therefore you're always in the street. I hate to say it,
but I've even been kicked out of better places than this.
Right.
I couldn't resist that when he threw that one right down the middle of the plate, Terry, did he? And I will be again.
Yes. You know? But so, and there's something coming up very important. Here's what I see that happened recently. We had a... a bit of a debate and a bit of a struggle over what was going to happen in order to get a budget through. And as usual, we on the left feel that we lost. We lost our shirt and our tie.
Why
our
should we feel
shocks,
we lost? We just gave them what they wanted.
And we now have another interesting situation where we have the deficit ceiling needs to be raised.
That's true.
The debt ceiling needs to be raised. Now, what's important is all sides understand that if we don't raise the debt ceiling, pretty much we fall into the recession of 1929.
Well,
along
much,
with
much
half
worse,
of the rest
much,
of the world.
Much worse because the United States government has never defaulted on its debt. We did it in the Civil War. We did it in the Revolutionary War. We've been through worse times than this, friends. We have never defaulted on our debt, and that's why the world decides when there's all kinds of turmoil, whether it's in China or Japan or Libya, wherever it is, people run to the U.S. dollar as a place of safety.
Right.
And that actually does a lot for our economy because it means that we can borrow money very, very cheaply. If we ever default on that national debt, we lose the dollar's not the safest place to be. We lose that forever. We'll never, ever get that.
You know what's
back.
Funny? I saw a poll that said like 46% of the people said that we should not raise the debt ceiling. And I think a lot of it is about language. People hear the term debt ceiling and they apply what they think it means
in terms of their home budget.
Like, and say, well, that
house.
Means we'll borrow more, so we shouldn't do it.
Not
knowing the technical economic explanation of what happens if it doesn't.
It means we don't pay our bonds.
Right.
That's what it means.
It means our economy crashes along with half the rest of the world is what
it
really
means.
You know,
but we're already at that point. If you go back in history...
Oh, we're not at that point, my friend.
Oh, yes, we are. Yes, we are. If you go back in history
it's always revolutionary.
No,
it's always...
Little history, calm down. Just eat your food and be quiet, Mark. It's okay. You know. If you go back and check through history, back in the beginning of the crisis after 1929, before the Depression really got bad, the one thing that really pushed it over the edge was the decrease, almost elimination, of federal funding, of federal spending. And that's the first mistake that was made. I see we have a scholar here in the audience that has checked his history
What Herbert did is he raised taxes.
They also stopped the spending. It had been at a relatively high level. They cut it off, just as the Republicans have demanded we're doing this time. And that's what really pushed it down into the Depression.
Sure, whenever you decrease.
And it's going to happen again. It's going to happen again because they're doing the same thing
again. Well, here's the thing about it,
paying attention?
The issue with the debt ceiling, I think, is not really... you know, whether it needs to go up or whether it shouldn't go
Everyone
up.
Everyone agrees it has to go up. Even
there's two different issues
and
here. We're
John Boehner has said he knows that it would be catastrophic not to do it. So I don't believe
Boehner recognizes catastrophe?
I don't believe.
It's a game of
what happened.
Yeah, so I don't believe that for one second that the Republican leadership will allow the debt ceiling
did
to
he cry?
Yeah. Now,
the question
here's the
is,
thing
did
about
he
it.
If he didn't cry,
what
then
they
I don't
have said, what they said was, before this happens, we're going to have to get a lot. We're going to have to get big things. The reality is this. We know they're going to raise it. They don't really have to get anything. In my humble opinion, what the president should say is this. Listen.
We call you.
Talk with your mouth full.
Number one, I will not negotiate the debt ceiling. You will raise it. I'm not negotiating on it. If you want to tell the American people you're going to throw the whole economy under the bus, go ahead and do it. And come before the American people and have a speech and say, let me explain the debt ceiling, and this is what happens if it isn't raised.
Call your bluff.
Now, you can have these people make a decision and you support them or not support them, but I'm telling you, if it doesn't go up, this is what's going to happen, and walk away and say to the Republican Party, don't call me. I don't want to hear from you. I want a piece of paper on my desk to sign. There's no negotiating and I'm not talking.
Have you been talking to Obama's speechwriter, hopefully?
No, unfortunately, no. I think it's going to go something
please
like
do.
This.
Yeah.
What do you want?
Yeah, what do you want? We'll
See,
give it
I'm
to
afraid,
you. Then we'll,
I fear,
then we'll
but
call
I hope not. I hope not.
Yeah.
I'm afraid
out
Obama
hope,
will give them something symbolic for that.
And what more do they need, for heaven's sake? They've given them everything they want.
Let me give you an example. Just recently, the first people they threw under the bus is the fine...
it's the American people, but go ahead.
It's the fine people of the place where we sit right now, of the District of Columbia.
As
you know,
Oh, yeah.
The District of Columbia...
And let's give a little applause for Mayor Gray that
that's
had to,
right.
go
right
to take it
this
to the street to
guy.
Get out there, get arrested, Terry. Get handcuffed.
He took it to the streets.
He did indeed, and I'm
so
proud
let's tell
him.
People what happened
really
so they know why Mayor Gray got arrested. The District of Columbia gives a whole $62,000, which in congressional terms is smaller than the smallest.
That's what they spend on each office spends on like copy of paper.
That's 0.00001% of the budget. DC uses its own money to allow women to get abortions. Now, this is something that the DC voters, through their elected representatives on the DC City Council, have said they want. It's a very tiny amount of money. And 17 states do it as well. So the federal Congress, the Republicans, the people who claim to believe in states' rights, who claim to believe that local people should decide, they said, we don't care. DC is a colony. It's occupied territory. It's not one of the 50 United States. It's not good enough to have a member that has a voting member in Congress. We're going to rule over you like the, well, let's face it, the colonial overlords that we are. And you can't decide what you want, DC. And our president, to his discredit, in order to keep the larger question of funding Planned Parenthood through the District of Columbia under the bus.
And he said,
our mayor, Greg, he went out there.
With city council members.
And he got arrested, and good
about
for him.
About 40 other people.
Someone has got to stand up for D.C., and if it's not going to be President Obama, who's it going to be?
Mayor Gray, I guess, is the last one we've got.
Well, but
I mean, it is inspiring to me. I mean, not only what's happened in Wisconsin, I don't want to just hit on this only issue, but since John Conyers brings it up continually. You know, what happened in Wisconsin is inspiring, and it's got to happen on a larger scale. What happened with Mayor Gray sort of leading the charge here is inspiring, and it's got to happen on a larger scale. Because Garland and I were talking about this afternoon, and, you know, and the simple fact is that any government, any power group will misuse its power until it realizes that actually the people, by their numbers, by their mass, have enormous, enormous political power and can affect enormous change.
Terry, I'm going to do something I rarely do.
And they will push and push and push. Power groups will always push until the people finally stand up and say no more. And we have the power to do it because we have the numbers.
I'm going to do something I rarely do. I'm going to agree with you, Terry.
Wow.
Holy moly. Now the show's over.
Drew,
you can shut this down. We'll go home now.
Be patient. Be patient. He's learning. He's going to school. He's learning.
The people of the District of Columbia do not have a vote in Congress. Eleanor Holmes Norton's a wonderful person, but she doesn't get a vote.
No power.
The only power they have is in the streets. And this is a
perfect case. And I'm not talking about just D.C.
But let's talk about D.C. because here's a home case right here for the audience of WPFW where the District of Columbia voters have been disrespected. Where the United States Congress, which the D.C. doesn't have a vote in, says, we don't give a damn about your democracy. We're going to impose our will. We don't believe in local rights. We believe in imposing on you like colonial overlords. And if the people of D.C. were to get out there in the tens of thousands, we know where Congress is. It's very close to us. It's based here.
We don't have to travel very far.
We got out there and we started being in the way.
Yeah.
And look what the Egyptians did at Tahrir Square. Can't the people of D.C. rise up and protect all they're trying to protect is their autonomy?
I'm going
to
disagree with you.
This isn't about abortion. This is about the freedom of people to have democratic rights.
I'm going
to
disagree with you there because if the people.
Really?
Only in one sense. In one sense. If the people of D.C. get up and that's their only issue, they're missing the bigger point. And one of the things that's destroyed the movement on the left, destroyed progressives and Democrats, is they do not unify on bigger issues. They all go after their – thank you. Yeah, that's here. They all go after their little piece of
Terry.
The pie, their little issue. They do not unify. They do not work together. And so, therefore, they can be easily
well,
dismissed.
Well, you can replace the word bigger with any issues.
Well, okay.
The problem is – because
DC can't defend its autonomy.
Because let me tell you what happens. In these negotiations, here's what happens. Because traditionally – and I'm a guy who's – I like President Obama. I support him. But when he does something that I don't like, I'm going to say that also.
You bet.
Now, here's what's happened, I think, with the administration now. They do what's called the myth of the middle. And that's basically works like this. Anytime you're in the middle, you're in the right place. If you guys just go to the middle, and that's where you should be, and that's the best answer. The middle is always the best answer. Here's the myth of that. People know that if they stretch things to the right, the middle moves further and further to the
kill
right.
Kill all poor people. Right. We'll only maim them.
That's
a compromise.
And that's why, a lot of people don't recognize, that's why Paul Ryan put this extremist budget out. Why? Because he puts a budget out that's way over to the right. If he puts a budget out that's closer to the middle, then the middle moves over.
That's right.
He puts a budget that's way out to the right. Let's wipe out Medicare. Let's give rich people everything, etc. And then the middle moves over. And when you say, well, let's keep a couple people on, you know, people over 95 can be on Medicare.
That's nice.
You know,
that's
and thoughtful. Other than that, you know, that, you're pretty
that's
much
heartwarming.
On your own. Yeah. But yeah, when you move it sweet. when you move it way over there, other things don't look so bad. That's exactly why Paul Ryan did that. Now we've got a bunch of people on TV
saying,
Paul Ryan, let me finish this. We got a bunch of people on I listen to these people that are so-called allegedly supposed to be the left on TV, and they're saying Paul Ryan is brave. Let me tell you what is brave. It's not brave to give everything to the wealthy people to pay your bills and take everything from the poor people. What would be brave would be if he looked in the face of the people that are giving him millions of dollars and said, I'm not going to give it all to you. I'm going to give some of it to these other people. The idea has twisted so much now that you're brave. It's a brave thing to do to give everything to the wealthy
and
to leave the poor squirming and homeless in the street.
Isn't it a fact? You're exactly right.
If that's the case, I'm not very brave.
No, you're exactly right. But isn't it the case that Obama's already shot himself in the foot? I mean, he's going to give the speech. He shot himself in the foot about 15 times. He's going to give the speech tomorrow night.
Tomorrow afternoon. And I fear that speech.
And so do I, because he's already indicated he's going to, you know, basically refer to the ideas given by the commission, some of which of the ideas were good. But he's already moved away from the middle. He's, you know, he's already given in by just even making that piece of knowledge available to the public and to the press today. It's shameful. It really is.
President Obama.
His speech should be going out there, and exactly as you're saying, Gunn, it should be a strong speech moving further to the left so that the right has to be
pulled on a little bit, if nothing else, for negotiation.
Just tactics.
Yeah, for negotiation purposes, you've got to go to the, you got to pull this thing back
to the left.
It's
not just negotiation. President Obama is forgetting what happened in the last great government shutdown of 1995. Bill Clinton did not move to the middle. There's a myth that he did. He said, don't touch Medicare.
Yep.
Medicare is important. Don't touch Social Security. Social Security is important. And his poll numbers went up. There's a wonderful op-ed in the Washington Post, today's Washington Post, pointing out just that. When this happened last time, you had the extremist Newt Gingrich. What happened? Bill Clinton did not go to the middle. He defended progressive principles. That's what Obama has to do here.
I agree. You know, if you go by the poll, the funny thing about it is this. The government we have now is in no way shape. You know, they always talk about polls. The polls say this or that. But they're in no way representing the American people. The polls say the opposite of what they're doing. The polls support the safety net.
They support the billionaire tax hikes.
But you know what the polls say? The polls say they want them to raise the taxes.
Right.
Most people want them to raise taxes
and
on the super wealthy. They're ignoring the polls.
What is a greater demonstration of the dilemma that we're in than when the polls say the public wants one thing and the Congress and the President of the United States basically ignore those polls, who does this tell you might be pulling the strings? Could it be the corporations of America? Could it be the banks of America? Could it be the Chamber of Commerce of America that are pulling the strings?
Well, and then they go out and brag.
This is the big issue you've got to understand. This government is not run by the people. It's not even influenced by the people anymore. And that's why I am so radical about taking it out to the streets.
Until
that happens, it's just now the corporations, the banks, the insurance companies telling Obama what to do. Because Obama has one plan, that's to be elected in 2012. He needs $1 billion to do it, and he's campaigning now because he's sucking up the money now.
Terry, according to the Supreme Court, corporations are people.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Oh, I forgot.
So I think Walmart is running for Congress or something in Bentonville, Arkansas.
Yeah, and Donald Trump's going to be Secretary of State or something like that.
Well, the other thing about it is this.
I think Senator Exxon would be very good for the corporations.
We could put like a big gas pump in his seat.
There you go.
And just wiggle the nozzle when they want to vote.
And if Donald Trump does become, you know, president, do we all get his hair? I mean, do we get?
I hope not.
We get free tops.
That would be worse than what's happening in Japan.
I need some more hair.
Clearly, the country would be better off if there was a billionaire running things.
No question about it. That would really
fix it all, wouldn't it?
Well, yeah. Well, as long as he took it all for himself.
Yeah, that's right.
If Donald Trump becomes president, I'm thinking there's some areas of Japan that I'd like to move to, radioactive or not.
Yeah, I'm with you.
I'll go to Costa Rica. Thank you.
Yeah. So, once again, you're listening to WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. Garland Nixon with...
Terry D. Kester.
And
Mark Levine.
And we are patiently waiting. We've got a guest. His name is Congressman John Conyers, and he's going to be here. We are confident he's going to be here. We know he's going to be here, but we know we got to wait a few minutes.
Well, there are votes, and he's doing his constitutional
thing. Yeah, and you know, we have a visual representation of what we're talking about here, too. You know, Garland, you know, you and I have talked.
Yeah.
We know each other fairly well. We know that economically we're struggling and everything
else. Oh, absolutely.
You know, and here's Mark over here just eating and feeding his face.
Because
he hasn't offered us a
eating
here.
What a great metaphor.
Food is good here. I'm sorry.
What a great metaphor, Terry.
It is. You know, we're starving. Look,
what a great metaphor. Mark eats steak while the two of us starve.
If our audience could eat while they watch the show, why can't I eat while
Mark,
you do the show?
Are you over there counting your gold also, pal? Come on.
It's not that expensive here. It's a good bargain.
I'm not that we're picking on you or anything, Mark. You know,
But all jokes
the people
aside,
on the radio wouldn't even know I was eating if y'all didn't mention it.
Oh, well, that's why we mentioned it, Mark.
They wouldn't be able to tell by your voice, that's for sure. But we're on every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. And every other week we're here. When we're not here, we're in every other Tuesday we're here at Ben's
Next
Door.
It's real simple. The second Tuesday of every month and the fourth Tuesday of every month, we are here at Ben's Next Door with a live audience broadcasting from here.
And the fifth when it exists.
Yes, and the alternate Tuesdays is great because we're in the studio, and when we're in the studio, we take phone calls so you can be a part of it. And don't forget, we always have a mic available here. So if you want to come, if you want to be a part of the show, our audience right now, if you want to step up right now,
John Conyers would be a real good time. If
you have questions or comments, if you want to jump into the fray.
Because once he gets here, we're probably going to spend most of our time with him just because
However, after this discussion, please, no screaming and crying.
Who says no screaming and crying? Terry does it all the time.
Yeah, well, whatever his name
it's
is.
Only
yeah.
Fair.
You know, I mean, it's a Washington trend these days. You know, if you can't be lugubrious, you know, you can't run for office. Let's face it.
So, and the thing we're going to talk about when the congressman gets here is jobs. We only got a moment or so here.
Hand me a French fry,
we're
going
to talk about jobs, which is a curious issue because now we've got to a point where the right wing in this country wants to separate people so much that they're even separating by the type of jobs. If you're a private worker, then you're a good guy, although they've stripped all your benefits and you have a 401k, but you don't actually have a retirement. You're a good guy. If you're a public sector worker, you're a bad guy. And they look at them and they say, look at that guy. Here's my favorite joke. Okay? There's a CEO and there's a Tea Party member sitting there and there's a dozen donuts. And the CEO looks down. No, there's a CEO, a Tea Party member, and a union worker sitting there. There's a dozen donuts. The CEO reaches down. He grabs 11 of the donuts. He cuts the other one in half. He takes that too. He looks at the Tea Party member and says, that guy wants to take your half a donut.
That's right. That union worker does. Well, that's what they do.
That's
exactly
what's happening right here
do.
Before your very eyes, right here with Mark and his French fries.
Yeah, that's right.
I shared my French fries with you. I believe in sharing.
Moving, you know what? He's moving to the right on us. he's not sharing his fries.
Hey, we have to take a break. If y'all want to join us down at Ben's Next Door, there's still time to do so. 1211 U Street. You can watch us in person. You
Bring
may even
French
get
fries.
A French fry.
Yeah.
Well, not from Mark. If Terry and I have fries, you'll get some.
Yeah.
We'll be right back.
Ladies and gentlemen, from the John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts in Washington, D.C.
WPFW is proud to be the media sponsor for the Kennedy Center 2010-2011 Jazz Series. On Friday, April 15th, Ben Williams takes the stage at the Kennedy Center Jazz Club for performances at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. Eldar rounds out April's offerings with an appearance at the Kennedy Center Jazz Club. Performances are at 7:30 and 9:30 p.m. Go to kennedy-center.org to find out about other exciting performances. WPFW, your station for jazz and justice, serving the collective needs and imagination of the community.
Into the night and back to the Raucous Caucus.
Good evening and Welcome back to the Raucous Caucus. My name's Garland Nixon, and I'm here with
Terry D. Kester
and
Mark Levine,
and our guest of honor,
yeah,
Mr. Congressman John Conyers Jr. Let's have a big round of applause.
Yeah. Welcome.
And we're at Ben's Next Door, 1211 U Street. There's still time to come and see
there's
Mr.
Still a
Conyers
few seats.
In person.
There's plenty of food.
Yes. Well, thank you very much for coming, Mr. Conyers. And I understand that there's some issues going on with jobs, and you're putting forth the jobs bill, and you actually want to see Americans go back to work.
Garland, there's not only an issue going on with jobs. That's the greatest single issue domestically confronting the United States. We want everybody to have work in America. And there's no reason in the wealthiest, most powerful society in history that that can't happen.
Mr. Conyers, how do you compare what you're trying to do with what Franklin Delano Roosevelt did in the New Deal? Is it the same kind of thing?
Well, it differs in a way. First of all, President Roosevelt was a man of great vision, and he came in when we were in an official depression. Obama is a young man of great vision, but he came in when we were trying to call it a recession that we're coming out of, a deep recession, a downward cyclical activity. Look, for many people in America, we're in a depression now.
You That's right, believe you it. Can say
you
that again.
You better believe it. Representative Conyers, I have a big question that I've really been thinking about and want to ask you. You and I, at least, go back a long time. I mean, these guys are kind of young. You know,
I go back to Hayes Tilden, incidentally.
Yep.
Hayes Tilden, 1876?
Yeah, very good.
I actually
very
know
good.
That reference.
Very good. All right, very good.
I didn't know you were involved in that race, but okay.
I wasn't in the race.
Just go back to it.
But I was, and I wasn't in Congress, but I was there.
I believe you.
Okay.
But back when you and I were in the streets, you know, there were congressmen and senators in the Democratic Party that would stand up against a Democratic president and say, you're not going far enough. You're not doing what needs to be done. My question is, other than yourself, where are the Democrats that are not pushing President Obama?
Well, I want to add one name to my list right away, and that's Dennis Kucinich.
Kucinich, also from Michigan, yeah. What is it about Michigan? It's the only smart people we got.
He's from Ohio.
Ohio. Yeah. Yo. Look, there's a reluctance for us to realize what I have said from the beginning, is that our job is to push this president into a more progressive position, because the powers that be in the American political system are always pushing him to a less progressive.
Right.
Amen.
They got the Tea Party wackos on the right. Where are wackos on the left? Where are people saying we won't take anything less than single payer and you got to compromise with us?
Let me add this. Recently, right here in Washington, D.C., we had the mayor who went out and who actually protested with some city council members and actually got arrested. And you know what's interesting? Everyone you talk to, I know people that before that said, I don't know about Vincent Gray, who after that said, hey, man, I like that guy. I support
right.
that guy. He's
Darn
tough.
Right.
Helped him.
Did you want to make a comment? I have John Conyers III with me just
okay.
in case.
All right.
Let's
Whoa.
Welcome him.
Whoa. All right.
Come on up.
Right ahead.
Hi, how are you all? How are you? Let me first preface my statement that I'm not going into politics, but I'm political minded. And I will say that in terms of the question, where are all the Democrats pushing the president? I think if you look back in history, dating back to this country being founded.
Speak up real
quick. If you look back in our history, dating back to, you know, 1776 when this country was founded, you'll see that it didn't start with the politicians. It started with the people.
That's
so
right.
When the people get up and they start pushing back and they take a stand, you know, then you'll see a change. But until then, you know, that's how it's going to be. People shouldn't be afraid of their government. The government should be afraid of the people. Period.
We got a theme going here.
Jerry, a lot of smiles.
Behind that statement, I think you ought to consider politics.
Here, here.
I mean, you got a name that could get you elected at least.
For quite a long time.
Well, would you consider, keep your mind open?
Keep your mind open.
We can make news here tonight.
Congressman Conyers.
Well, this is a discussion for this evening.
Okay.
After the program.
We've seen people recently. Finally, we see some people get angry enough in Michigan, in Wisconsin.
They're angry in Michigan.
To go out and to actually do something and it takes some action. You know, what does it take? You were involved in the civil rights in the civil rights movement, deeply involved. And what you saw was that if people get out and just walk around, that they'll win every single time. What does it take? What can we do as talk show hosts? What can we do in the media? What does it take to get people to wake up to say, I got to go out here and do something?
Well, first of all, we have to begin to examine the issues and break them down for people to understand. Your program is one of the few in the media that's doing its job.
Most of the media is not doing its job. And let's extend that to WPFW.
Yes. And again, to all our listeners out there, WPFW doesn't take corporate money, and that allows us. That's why, let me throw this out. Don't forget, when we do our fund drive, support us. The Republicans, we're trying to defund some of the organizations that help us out.
The Corporation of Public Broadcasting. And just as a simple fact, if we lost Corporation of Public Broadcasting funding, WPFW would lose about 19% of its budget. That means goodbye, and the first two bidders for our frequency, Verizon and AT&T. That's what's happening in America.
Congressman Conyers, I got to ask you a question because I think a lot of progressives are thinking this. I remember in January 2008, I was on the radio, and I had a really tough decision to make. I had to decide whether to endorse Hillary Clinton or Barack Obama in the Democratic primary for president. It was a really hard decision because I looked at their policies. They were virtually identical on most issues. And so the question was, who was going to be the stronger progressive? At least that was the decision in my mind. And, you know, it was really tough for me. Barack Obama was new to the scene, and I decided, well, Bill Clinton sometimes compromised a bit too much. Maybe this new guy will stand firm. I got to tell you, given the speech that I fear Barack Obama is going to give tomorrow, there are a lot of progressives who feel like me, well, maybe Clinton would have been the better choice. I'm getting real disappointed here in our president, and I want you to either buck me up or tell me the truth. Is he compromising too much?
The president seems to have a there seems to be two Barack Obamas. One was the candidate Barack Obama.
I liked him.
And now the other is the President Barack Obama. And the President Barack Obama is too quick to conciliate, to hold his hand out to negotiate.
I agree.
And to give major concessions to people who are not going to do anything else but demand more from him.
Exactly.
After every time he has a generous negotiating impulse. And my job, and more progressives are beginning to believe this, is to tell him to stop negotiating so generously with our entitlements, with our Social Security, with our Medicaid, we don't have to negotiate that.
There was a columnist way back during the election, since Mark brought it up, and I can't remember who it was, but he pointed out quite astutely that President Obama, not then president, but during the campaign, candidate Obama was not a visionary, that he was a pragmatist. And that he, you know, built his reputation, building consensus, et cetera. And that is not in any way a denigration, but that essentially seems to be the fact. He is not a man of vision. That doesn't mean he won't embrace visions, but it seems by himself he will not fight for them, he will not dedicate to them, he will not sacrifice for them.
Well, let me throw one thing out there, too, and I say this, because you have to add something to that. And that is the progressives are asleep or something. Because it seems that a lot of people said, oh boy, we want change. Let's vote for Barack Obama. And when he got voted in, they said, okay, give us our change. We'll be over here sitting down, you know, having a soda or something.
Yep.
You know, the Tea Party and the right, our president tends to find the middle. The Tea Party and the right yank everything so far to the right that the middle moves over. Meanwhile, the progressives, we're not over there dragging him back to the other side to stretch this thing out. So, you know, to some extent, I think the progressives in this country have gone to sleep. I mean, am I you know, out of line there?
Well, not if you haven't heard Michael Eric Dyson lately on the subject. Of course we haven't gone to sleep. We realize that we have got to do two things. Now, we've got to, first of all, re-elect Barack Obama next November.
No, we do. We do. But we also need to push him to the left.
Well, that's the other thing. There's two things we have to do. And we have to learn how to recognize that making him a better progressive president is not antithetical to his being reelected.
Exactly.
As a matter of fact, it will enhance his reelection.
Because he'll be a leader. But he seems like such a follower these days.
But given the fact that his office has already stated that they need to raise $1 billion for their campaign, is he not, as most politicians, and I hope excluding yourself, and I mean that with all really honest respect.
It's definitely excluding John Conyers, yeah, you know, right. I assure
but
you.
But I mean, are not our congressmen, our senators, our representatives, and our president beholden to the financial contributors, and that means the big players?
Well, no, I don't think I raised quite a bit of money myself, but I'm not beholden to anybody.
Oh, I know.
But you're the exception, sir.
But you do seem to be the exception.
Well, of course, people give money for one reason. They hope to influence the donee that they're giving money to.
Of course. So, it's called legalized bribery, my view.
Well, yeah. Now, there is a solution to that. A public campaign finance law.
Thank you. Thank you, John Conyers.
Anybody from using even their own money. You know, my dad used to tell me, his granddad, and this is when we were growing up, he said anybody that was a millionaire had to do something improper or illegal to have become a millionaire. That was just understood. He came out of the labor movement. He worked for a living. He organized people. Well, now a millionaire, who were a millionaire?
It's the billionaires, the Koch brothers.
It's billionaires now. Right. It's multimillionaires. Who cares? A guy making $1 million, he could be in a bad fix himself, for all we know.
Well, you know, they've pretty much taken everything they can from the middle class.
He might be honest.
From the middle class, I think the millionaires better be worried, because they're going to probably go after them. They're going to consider them the middle class and go after the millionaires next.
Well, now this is what the good thing is about this overreaching. Finally, it isn't just poor people or working people or inner city people or minorities being affected. Guess what they're doing? They're reaching into working
middle class people,
suburban.
Yes,
you better believe
it. Are now beginning to say, hey, wait a minute, I voted for those guys, but I didn't mean this.
Right. That's right.
Yeah. Congressman Conyers, you said you came out of the labor movement. I want to hear your comment on Wisconsin and what, and of course you're from Michigan, where the labor movement still has some power. What can we do to stop Wisconsin's from growing to the other 49
and
states?
And strengthen unions in general.
Number one, we've got to recommit ourselves to the most fundamental obligation of every American citizen. We've got to figure out who's running and voting for the people that most comport with our wishes. After all, in a democratic society, if there are people in here that are not supporting your beliefs and position, you have an opportunity to either one, vote for somebody else, two, vote them out of office, three, run yourself.
But Governor Walker of Wisconsin was very tricky. He did not run on ending collective bargaining. That came up after he was elected. So do you think he'll be recalled? Do you think that's going to work?
Well, there are recall petitions waiting for the incumbent conservative governor in Michigan. Right now, we're waiting for he's got to be in office a certain amount of time statutorily, but they're getting the petitions ready. And
good planning ahead. I like that.
Well, what's going on in Michigan? What's going on in Michigan with unions?
And
just
Detroit.
Ask you that.
Well, the whole union movement is in the process of regrouping. They've got a wake-up call. Is that you guys better start representing people and organizing more and taking on the corporate interests that now are not only running the government, but they are in the process of breaking the labor movement, period. This thing is spreading. And so we have a great educational challenge, but most of all, the conservatives got in Michigan, not because they outvoted us. We didn't come out to vote.
Well, you know, you made a very strong point a second ago, and it's something I make here regularly, a very powerful point, and that is, you know, you have to, in our country, you have to figure out who most represents your views and support them. Because, oh, do I get mad at President Barack Obama over some of the things he does? You better believe I get mad at it. But let me tell you something. Come November, I'm voting for Barack Obama. I look out
You're
and I
see. You're not voting for Newt Gingrich,
Garland? No, I see Michelle
Bachman. You're not voting for Sarah Palin?
I see Michelle Bachman.
Michelle Bachman? No.
She's Donald Trump.
Michelle Bachman
Donald
is.
How about Glenn Beck?
Michelle
How about
Bachman
Donald
is,
Trump? Right.
Michelle Bachman is out there for people who think Sarah Palin is too much of an intellectual.
Yeah, right. Ooh. Good. So, Sarah for Garland.
So when it comes down to it, all of us who say, well, I'm mad at Barack Obama for this or that, when we look at the playing field, let me tell you something. You're going to be making a decision between maybe getting some of the things you don't want, some of the things you want, or all of the things that you don't want. That's not a decision.
I predict that Barack Obama will get it when people start speaking up about what they don't want from him. They want more fight. They want more leadership.
How do we get that message across to our president? What can American progressives do to tell Barack Obama, don't run in there tomorrow and concede a point? What can we do to tell Barack Obama, don't give in on Medicare, don't give in on Medicaid? How do we do that?
Right. And then come out and brag and say, we've had a great deal.
Yeah.
Seriously,
how
do we get the message across to our president? He's looking up something now. You got a speech for me? Or what do you got?
No. I got the letter. Give me the... 137. Give it to me. Didn't you bring it?
He's getting a letter.
While he's looking for that, let me just point out something.
Hold on, he's gonna answer.
You got it?
Okay.
You got it?
All right. He's getting a letter.
Yeah. Let me just point out what most progressives don't seem to realize. They sort of think this movement from the right, the Tea Parties and all that, is something new. And it's new individuals and a new...
We've
eruption.
Got a letter. It is not new.
It goes back decades. The planning for this goes back for decades.
The congressman has a letter here that for us to read. Can you tell us a little bit about the letter?
Yeah, we just said, Dear President Obama, this is 137 members of Congress.
All right.
Let him read the letter.
Please get on the stick.
Now, you want to read the letter? Let me read the letter here.
Well, he can read it. It's his
we
letter.
Write today.
Right. He can read it.
We write today to express our strong support for Social Security and our view that it should be strengthened. We oppose any cuts to Social Security benefits, including raising the retirement age. We also oppose any effort to privatize Social Security in whole or in part. You have charged the National Commission on Fiscal Responsibility and Reform with proposing recommendations that improve the long-term fiscal outlook and address the growth of entitlement spending. It is our view that Social Security, which is prohibited by law from adding to the national budget deficit, does not belong as part of those recommendations.
Hear, 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 hear.
More.
By 2023, Social Security will have built up a $4.3 trillion surplus and, without any action, can pay full benefits until 2037 and at least 75% of all benefits thereafter. Because Social Security is funded separately from the general treasury and has no borrowing authority, it has not contributed to the federal deficit. Despite these facts, some commission members have repeatedly alleged the need to cut Social Security for budgetary reasons. For 75 years, Social Security has been a promise to the American people that if they work hard and pay their fair share, they will have a financially secure retirement. In communities across the country, across this country, Social Security benefits are often the only source of income helping families maintain a decent standard of living. Social Security's benefits are modest, averaging less than $13,000 a year, but they are vital to the vast majority of Americans who receive them. Cutting Social Security benefits beyond the already scheduled increase in the retirement age from 65 to 67 would create even more needless hardship for millions of vulnerable Americans. This is especially true in the face of an economic downturn that has wiped out trillions of dollars that Americans were relying on for their retirement security and the increased dismantlement of the private and public pension system. If any of the Commission's recommendations cut or diminish Social Security in any way, we will stand firmly against them. We urge you to join us in protecting and strengthening Social Security rather than letting it fall victim to a misguided attempt to reduce budget deficits on the backs of working families.
Signed 137 members of Congress, including John Conyers.
Okay. All right. Now, are you with me on this letter?
Yes. Are you with me? Yeah. And everybody out there in radio land, you should be clapping also.
Now.
Stand up. We have someone in the audience. Speak into the microphone. Speak into the microphone. Right there. Just right there. If you don't mind giving us your first name.
Velva.
Velva. Okay.
I love this letter. It does exactly what I think it should. But my question is, why does our president not know this?
Amen.
Why does he not know this?
There's the question.
Congressman Conyers.
Thank you.
My political psychiatrist will be with you on the program tomorrow. I can imagine... But it isn't enough. I don't care why he doesn't know it. All I know is what we've got to do is organize. We who put him in office and say, look, buddy, you're going the wrong way.
Look, I'll play political psychiatrist with you. I think President Obama does know it. I think he does believe it. But he thinks, and he wrongly thinks, that politically it's unwise to stand by his principles. And that's why I think we have to help him defend what I think are, I believe in his heart those are his principles, but he's getting some bad advice saying, oh, well, I have to always find the middle. And we have to let him know the middle is don't touch Social Security. The middle is don't touch Medicare. And I also want to ask you about, because Mr. Conyers, your letter only deals with Social Security.
Yeah.
I want to talk about Medicare and Medicaid because that seems to be the first thing on the chopping block.
Exactly.
Is there a letter in action for that, I hope?
We do. We have another letter coming in the form of praising.
We're getting verification.
He's checking, getting another letter.
We've got a button here.
Oh, okay.
I love my Obamacare.
But we go one step further. Universal single-payer health care for everybody from the moment you're born.
It is so I hate to even admit it, but I'm in the process right now of getting into Social Security and Medicare and trying to figure it out. There is no way any normal human being can possibly figure out the system as it exists. It's worse than the damn tax code. It's absurd, it's obscene, and it punishes only the people who are the working people.
Well, let me
it's even cruel, even as it's set up today, even with Obamacare, it's still cruel.
Let me add something.
You're just a curmudgeon.
If nothing else,
he agreed with me. He gave me a thumbs up. Come on.
If nothing else, you're just a curmudgeon. If nothing else, just based on that last statement, Congressman Conyers is now the official hero of the Raucous Caucus.
Hear, hear.
Brothers and sisters, this is what makes me stay in this job. We have an opportunity to organize the millions of people that are looking for more from Obama.
That's right.
And we're going to get it out of him.
So what can the people do?
Because we will, wait, besides us writing, we're going to march, guys.
All right. Yes. Take it to
we're
the streets.
We're
going
to have to take it.
Yes.
And we're going to have to take it, if necessary, to the White House.
That's right. That's right.
I mean,
he needs to see us marching at the White
House.
What
part of this, Mr. 44th President of the United States, don't you understand?
That's right.
Okay?
That's right.
And this is out of love.
It is out of love.
I want
because
this.
I think we're appealing to his best, what he really wants to do, yeah. But he fears he can't do politically.
Well, he got so many conservative advisors in the White House, as you implied.
Oh boy.
That they should never have gotten in there in the first place.
Thank you.
We got to repeat the question. We have someone from the audience talking about the conservative dominance in the media.
And before that, let me just remind our listeners, you're listening at WPFW 89.3 FM here in Washington, D.C. It's the Raucous Caucus with Garland Nixon and
Terry D. Kester
and
Mark Levine.
And our guest of honor,
John Conyers.
All right.
The official hero.
The official hero of the Raucous Caucus.
And there ain't no other radio station in America that isn't starting a movement like this one.
He's going to have buttons. Yeah.
All right.
Going to have buttons. Right. Raucous Caucus buttons, man.
All right. Yeah.
That would be great. So we got to answer, because we are a democracy, we got to answer our question from our audience member. He wants to know about the conservative dominance of the media and what we can do about it.
Well, the FCC hasn't been doing its job. Okay. We need to get rid of all of those people on the commission, including the ones he appointed. What we need to recognize is the stuff you're reading in papers, and most of the stuff people are listening to on radio, and most of the talking
everything
heads
except
on
us.
Television. We need to have some progressive speakers, writers, activists, leaders, talking about these issues, because unless you do that, you got to listen. More people, there ought to be more stations like WPFW.
There ought to be.
Here.
Yeah. There ought to be more magazines like The Nation magazine. There ought to be more magazines like Mother Jones. There ought to be more magazines like The New Republic. There ought to be a progressive vision for people to sample and get to understand. You know, unfortunately, our electorate is the most uninformed electorate of all the modern nations on the planet. I say that sadly, because it's my job and your job to bring our educational understanding of governance up, because if we don't, we will lose our democracy.
True.
And that is closer than you think. That is closer than you think. The real thing is, and I think you've identified it too, is it's not just that they're uninformed, they are deliberately misinformed.
Yes.
Deliberately misinformed by almost every right-wing. Well, lying, and even worse than lying, you know, they tell half lies.
That's right.
Half truths.
Well, the thing, we're just about running out of time, but the thing that is important to keep in mind is he who controls the, or she, not to be gender specific, whoever controls the conversation controls everything.
It's
the conversation,
usually an it these days.
Right.
It's
the conversation shifted from jobs in November, as Congressman Conyers is attempting to address, to how much do we cut from the poor people and how much more do we give to the rich people so we can all be better off.
Now, do you think that some of these folks that work on 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue are listening to this and saying, I better send the president a memo saying these people are getting pissed off?
That's right.
I think
are you listening, President Obama? Don't change that channel. Don't change that radio channel.
No, but we may be starting something here tonight, frankly, with you all and with Congressman Conyers.
Well, we got to get ready to make for the hills here. But first of all, let's have a big round of applause for Congressman John Conyers Jr. and thank him for coming out here to spend some time with the Rockers Caucus. He's our official hero.
The official hero of the Rockers Caucus.
And thanks for your support as your first and only permanent hero. And I'm getting pins.
I love Obamacare pins.
Official
hero.
Oh, hero of the Rockets Caucus.
All right. Okay, and we want to thank Drew Franklin, who is our engineer.
David Kelly in studio.
And we will see you next week, 7 p.m., the Raucous Caucus 89.3 FM.
Well, but in studio, you can call in.
You can call us and tell us how much you love Congressman Conyers. We're out.